Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm happy how they did it. My two friends of Imperium could give me the farewell.
What three wrestling matches would you watch if you were stranded on a desert island? This is what I'm asking wrestling's best. In the ring, around the ring, behind the scenes, or behind a microphone. I'm Tom Campbell. Thank you for joining me on Cultaholic Island for another episode of Desert Island Graps. Tisha, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Doing all right, thank you. There was some news last week that lots of people were talking about. I feel like we should address it immediately. Rammstein tickets have gone on sale. Are you going or not?
If I get a ticket, I would, for sure. Like, I would lie when I would say I'm a huge fan, but I saw them once on a download festival. The performance they do is amazing. They have such a great show, and so sometimes it's you listen to music and you like it, but after you see the band perform live, you probably get more into a band, or you at all get into a band even before that you're maybe not a fan of it. So when I saw them live, I was kind of like, okay, I definitely have to listen to some more Rammstein songs. And also, like, it's very funny because they do a lot of, like, the lyrics have always a meaning, and it always fits, especially like when you know how like how the living in Germany is. So for sure, if I would get a ticket, yeah.
Is there a particular gig or a concert now the world is opening back up that you would love to go to?
Especially like all like the concerts where you get like mosh pits in, you know, like hardcore concerts. Big fan of like hardcore music. My favorite band, Stick to Your Guns, Stray from the Path, Terror, etc. Loads of great bands, but that's definitely a thing where I'm really looking forward when you go back to the little venues, not like the big giant concerts. They are not fun as like their little, you know, venues, which maybe get 100 or 150 people in, and you know, everybody's standing around in the middle, you have a pit and people like stage diving, and you know, you go on the stage and just probably the front singer gives you the mic and you just, you know, screen the lyrics. So that's kind of like my deal. So when that happens again, I will be a happy man.
Do you have a favorite mosh pit that you've ever been in?
Let me think about it. Like the last concert was December 2019, and the act was Stray from the Path. It was a funny one. I probably did my first stage dive because sometimes I'm more into the pit and not going out up on the dive, and maybe you didn't get caught. So that was one of my favorites, and because my first stage dive was cool, I kind of like Jeff Hardy swan and bomb on like five people, and they caught me well. And then the next picture, I saw a guy just dropping right on the concrete, and he did kind of like an elbow type of like dive. So he jumped in the air and like an elbow, and he completely dropped. And I tried to turn around and see my best friend I always go to concerts with in Germany, and she's like, "You saw that guy?" And then I figured out he wasn't behind me; he was the guy just, you know, taking a bump on the concrete. You know,
okay. Do you see that idiot? Oh wait, you're the idiot. Okay.
Oh, that was funny though. But I remember specifically because it was like kind of a special one, and that's always when Hatebreed plays. Hatebreed, for those guys who don't know Hatebreed, it's like very like they've been there since forever, and they always have like great music and everything. But those mosh pits are always kind of like it's very brutal. And when you see it, you think like people are crazy doing that, and they think yeah, they punch each other in the mouth and blah blah blah. So sometimes, you know, you get clocked. Okay, so you take it. Otherwise, just get the fuck out. But in that case, was every time when a Hatebreed pit opens, everybody starts moving. Everybody goes crazy, and always, and I mean really always, I've been to 3 or 4 Hatebreed gigs. Every time, the biggest guy, like the probably a big fat guy, just comes up and moshes, and then he gets creamed by like a smaller guy. Not on purpose, by accident, because, you know, everybody's throwing fists around, everybody like violent dancing, right? And then every time the big fat guy gets clocked in the face and he gets mad and wants to fight for real. And it's always the same, the big guy wants to fight for real, gets taken down by the little guy and then gets dragged out by the security guys. And it's like a choreography. It's like kind of like made up, like, okay, now it's the cue for the big fat guy comes in and being pissed that he gets punched in the face. So
some of the best wrestling storytelling has gone down in a mosh pit.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And the best cardio workout as well.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah, I imagine you saw for the best reasons.
That's the best.
You woke up Dub up a little bit when you had Anis Okay play you to the ring when they first heard Monster Crazy. I remember you said in an interview, like, when you had them playing you to the ring, like, initially the crowd are a bit like, oh, this is a bit loud, but you can't not hear it and not connect it to you now, Axel.
It's an awesome story to tell. So Anis Okay, the former front singer, Dave, he messaged me just a few minutes ago. So he got in contact with me just to give a small like intro why like the song and everything. So, and he got in contact with me and said, hey man, I'm Dave, blah, blah, blah. Just here's our new song. Just give it a listen and just tell me what you think. And it was probably from the LP they brought out. And then I was looking for kind of changing my entrance theme because I was turning here on WXW. So I was looking for something which is a little bit more. So, and I was listening to the song Monster Crazy. And then eventually WXW start touring, and then we had some tour stops, and a friend of mine, we kind of like did the backup organization for a show in Dresden, where I'm from. So in Dresden, in a small building on a Sunday, and you know, sometimes it's you know, you have a building full of wrestling fans, but also in that town, like, people come there because they probably know wrestling from the early 90s. So they kind of like, but older people, you know, grandma, granddad, everything. And this music, what Anis Okay plays, not for everybody, like in general, like metalcore and whatever shouting. So a lot of people like it, but a lot of people don't get it and don't like it, of course. So, and then you have this band, they open up and you have to assume like there's a stage, and the stage was used for them. The entrance was kind of like a back door, and inside the room, inside the venue, was the ring. So people sitting with the back towards the band on the stage, and especially the rows in the back, they sit right next to the speakers. So they start screaming, and people have been like, whoa, what is that? So they've been like old, like granny and grandpa or whatever, and like kids, and they never hear this music because they probably just listen to pop music or whatever. So they are not familiar with this kind of music and just thought like, what is going on? Like, do you see heads are turning, blah, blah, blah. And then with the entrance, the funny part was that I always have like the beats where you come in, right? And then that's the part where you go on the top and just, you know, raise your hands, or you go into the ring and, you know, different like rhythm and everything. And I was used to the rhythm when they played the entrance music by the tape, but I forgot this song was so damn long. And I just went in when they played it live, instead of letting them play and then just see a part, like maybe 1 minute before they're done with the song, just enter the ring or just enter the venue. I just walked in like it would be on tape. So then I kind of like awkwardly just had to stumble around in the ring and just wait till the song was over because I couldn't do like, okay, guys, that's it. So they finished the song, and I kind of like I don't know, when you can watch it on YouTube, you see me like maybe 3 or 4 times try to G up the people again, just, you know, almost over, give me something. So it was fun though. It's one of my bucket list stuff, what kind of like I checked for myself, because, you know, we got in contact and said, hey, you guys want to play? Give me your 3 songs and you get free pizza. And in that time, they've been that they had not that much exposure they have right now. So I was lucky to get them for free pizza playing at the WXW show in my hometown.
That's absolutely. We're going to get into the wrestling in a second. But before we do, I know you've just taken a call from Dave. But are you on board with Rudy now that he's replaced Dave?
To be honest, I'm very loyal to friends. So I'm friends with Dave. And that was actually the drummer, the former drummer, Daniel Herman. He and Dave been my guys from the band, because they've been the wrestling guys and just chatting and been awesome guys and awesome people, like them a lot. And always great to see them, and hopefully soon I see them again in person. But after Daniel left, it was kind of like, meh, you know, because you talk with people and you hear some stuff. And then after Dave left, and there's also a funny story about it, when he got, let's say, let go from the band, we met before. We went to dinner and just ate and sat and, you know, had a chat. And I said, yeah, so I have to go now for the tour meeting. And then they told him, hey, doesn't work anymore with us. We just, you know, want to split apart. Funny enough, when I got released, we had a chat. So kind of like we just bring ourselves like in a miserable position that we get fired or released or let go, whatever. Oh, it is. But yeah, no, but now just I'm not into NXT anymore, because, you know, there's some things I hear and just something where I'm not agreeing. And also, you know, you always I believe you always have to get 2 sides of the story. But, you know, that one side is enough. I'm not keen to be, you know, super, super into NXT anymore, because, you know, Dave is my friend and there's some reasons.
But it gave you Monster Crazy, which is a massive song to walk out to. You know,
so, I mean, not anymore, but it's okay. I wouldn't use it anymore.
No, like, but it was of a moment, wasn't it? It was of a time.
Oh yeah, it was still great. Great song, great LP, great music in general. So
woke all the people up. We're going to talk about some of your favorite wrestling matches, because we're going to send you onto a proverbial desert island, and with that, you'll take a DVD featuring 3 wrestling matches that you love, wrestling matches from across the decades, across the promotions that always inspire you, make you passionate about wrestling again, make you fall in love with wrestling all over again, or have some significance to them. So what would you like your first match to be, Axel?
It's probably the I Quit match, WrestleMania 13, between Bret Hart and Stone Cold Steve Austin. That's the first one, because it always pops in my head when I think about favorite matches. That's right there. Then I have to think. I would go, because that was such a mind-blowing match for me, I think it was TNA Turning Point, a triple threat between Samoa Joe, AJ Styles, and Christopher Daniels. Because that is, I loved TNA in that time. And it was such a great era, like X Division, when you had like guys like AJ and Samoa Joe, when he had this run there, and Chris Sabin, always for me an all-time great. So like all like the X Division, that was pretty influential for me and for my career. Because then I, for example, Samoa Joe, like a guy like that stature, that size, that heavy, can move like a freaking butterfly. So okay, cool. So I can do it too. So, you know, pretty motivated. So with the third one, I would say, so it's kind of a split, but because it was right after each other. So I would say WrestleMania 15, Steve Austin against The Rock. But even the match after on the Backlash pay-per-view was quite more intense. That makes sense, but it's kind of like I see matches like those, like this match and then the rematch on the next pay-per-view. The next one was like more fun, but like because it was the prestige of WrestleMania, and I'm a Steve Austin fan, and he won there, and I love the match as a like watching it as a 13-year-old, 12-year-old kid. That made my day. So
the Austin Hart I Quit match. Let's go back to that one. So you've been an Austin fan all your life. Why Steve Austin?
So Austin fan all my life would be a wrong statement. When I started watching wrestling was 1993. My first big pay-per-view I watched was WrestleMania 9. Still one of my favorites.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
It gets a lot of grief.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Even if it gets a lot of, like, you know, like the stories and everything. But that was like my first pay-per-view I watched. And I loved, like, all the babyface, like Bret Hart, amazing how he fought Yokozuna. And totally, like, into the whole, like, wrestling is real, right? Hulk Hogan, what a hero, blah, blah, blah. Undertaker, wow, he's amazing. So in that kind of, like, those three figures being cool, especially Undertaker in that time, because, like, he was so mysterious and, like, he's a bad man and blah, blah, blah. I liked all this, like, spooky stuff and everything. And he was right into that ballpark where I think, oh, cool, there's a character. But then I think 94, I stopped watching because school time and, you know, they broadcast it very late. So I had to go to bed, blah, blah, blah. And then around 2000, I just picked it back up with the Royal Rumble, which is one of my favorite pay-per-views as well. But in that time, Austin wasn't very present. So it was more The Rock and Triple H. And that was one of the best feuds ever, in my opinion. And I remember that still to this day, I was catched again, right into it. And I was always a WWE or a WWF guy in that time. Never liked WCW. So it was all for me that. And then they had like one angle with Austin on Backlash where he came back, kind of. And then when he came back later, I was like, oh, I remember that guy because I saw some TV tapings before Rumble 98 where he stunned everybody. And that was kind of, that stuck to my head. And then I kind of completely like, okay, Austin, he's the guy. And I like him because he's very authentic. Because when I met him, like sometimes they say, don't never meet your idols because you get disappointed. He disappointed at all. He was like, he's real. You know, probably not flicking you off and stuns everybody and hitting somebody with a chair or whatever. But he is the guy you see on television. And, you know, you can see that. You can feel that. And I think that's a part of his success, that he played himself just a little bit, with a turn up swag when he was a little bit more over his natural persona.
Yeah, so they always say turn it up to 11, don't they? They say personalities up to 11, and Austin was always one of those. You say when you met him, did you guys get a chance to chat much? Did you talk about things?
A funny story, though. It was my first WrestleMania access, and we just arrived with an NXT bus, and I saw him far away talking with Kevin Owens, and I was just, you know, standing there drinking a coffee. Didn't want to creep, you know, on him, like, blah, blah, blah. And then I saw him, okay, he's done talking with him. So I walked straight up to him because, you know, that was the chance. I sometimes you lose a chance to do something. And then that part was, okay, now or never. And I had also a funny story to tell him. And I knew, okay, he, as a podcaster, he's always interested in, like, stories. So, and then I walk up to him straight up, good handshake, proper handshake, blah, blah, blah. And just talk with him. And he was very open and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, the way he is, I kind of like, hey, kid, how are you? Blah, blah, blah. And just introduce myself and ask him if he has some time because I want to ask him about the story. And in the end, just, it was cool. Like, he asked me some questions and, you know, been very, very open to talk. So a lot of times you have this kind of like, ah, oh, not now or whatever. And then I kind of like ask him, hey, I don't want to bug you, but I not fanboyed him, or I tried it, and it's always hard, like as a fan, to not suck up, you know. So, oh, you're greatest, I'm just match blood, because it's something you probably shouldn't do, because it's, I don't know, it's I believe it's wrong. So I kind of like told him in, you know, a side sentence that I had a lot of poster of him because I was a, you know, huge fan of. And then in the end, I kind of asked him, hey, if you don't mind, I would like to get a photo with you, but, you know, don't be bothered right now or anything. You probably will see us again over the 4 days. But if you don't mind, you know, I would like to have one. And he said, yeah, why not? Just catch me when you see me, blah, blah, blah. And then the next day, I just had another little chat with him. And then, oh, yeah, that's a good one. So I did not saw him on WrestleMania day, and then had he like the surprise appearance with HBK and Mick Foley, where he stunned New Day and stunned Rusev and blah blah blah, all those guys, and when he dislocated his rotator cuff.
Yes, I remember. So, I remember this. Yeah, I didn't. It was you couldn't tell when it was all going on, but yeah, exactly. He did himself an injury.
He's
old that school. Day.
He's like, no, I'm not showing it. But he was legit hurt. So, but nobody knew because he didn't show it off. So in the end, was for me like I saw him after that backstage, and I kind of like ran up to him like to just to call him because his bad motherfucker walk. You know, he walks backstage probably pain as hell in his shoulder, and he's not, you know, flinching once, kind of. Or he's not like making any move of like, ah. And I went up to him and he looked pissed, but not like pissed because he's angry, because he was in pain probably. Again, nobody knew. I didn't know. And I asked him, hey, are you later at the after show party? He said, no, will not go. So, okay. So probably I will not see you tomorrow or so, but would you mind doing the picture right now? He said, yeah, okay, fine. Took my phone, just one of the staff guys, hey, come over here. Take some pictures of us. And he took the picture. And I still have the picture. And it's such an amazing picture because the picture is, it describes how cool he is, even with a fucked up shoulder. And he's probably in pain, like 100%. He still takes the time he promised me to take a picture of him. He did it. And that's a cool story to tell. And that is kind of for me, like, an impression I will never forget of him.
That's a cool
story for myself, you know, because like idolized and blah blah blah. So that I have the experience, like, to can tell the story, I'm very grateful.
That's amazing. So it's no doubt, no obvious why he's two of your three matches. You know, a guy like that. But with the wrestling scene, as you were getting back into it, so you're a fan in '93. You dipped out and you sort of came back sort of around the Attitude Era. So, as you were growing up in Germany, as you were coming through in Germany, what was the wrestling scene like then?
It was nothing. They, like, the German wrestling scene in the 80s and 90s was very big with all the tournaments and everything. And then after that, business came down. And I think it was because wrestling got too much exposed of, everything is fake. And I do not know how it is in Britain, for example, but German people are very like, oh, it's not real, so I don't believe it. I don't want to watch it. It's fake anyway. You know, still watching stuff like, you know, Germany's Next Top Model, whatever, which is all casted and all like scripted, but you know, I don't want to watch fake wrestling. So, and that was in that time because, you know, everybody believed like beginning of the 90s that's real, and then they got the message about, hey, it's scripted. So the scene was very low. Some promotions promoted, but like with guys who kind of like lived through the whole ECW gear era. So everybody had like cut up jeans, and you know, everybody looked like a mix of Raven and the Crow and whatever. So, and you have a lot of like characters there, but like most importantly, non-professional people.
With in the late 90s, you had two German stars on the main wrestling shows. You had Alex Wright on WCW, and yep, for the Attitude Era in the WWF, you had Bracus. What is your experience, if any, of Bracus representing Germany in the WWF? May have come and gone.
By that, I think it was 95 or something, if I'm not mistaken, I totally skipped that year.
Because it was whenever they ran shows in Germany, they sort of wheel out Bracus, and he'd pick up a big win over someone like a Jeff Jarrett, and then be away again. But that was kind of all the representation there was. I mean, did you feel like there was a chance for you to work in the WWF at that point with the representation being so thin?
At that point, 2000.
Mm.
No, I was 13 and I was total fanboy. And I started training, actually. I started training wrestling in 2000 because I had enough with football. Played a little bit in a football club, and then, stopped being a fan of that because I was annoyed of all, like, the trainings and everything because I didn't understand the business of it, you know. I was a big Borussia Dortmund fan, and then everybody left the club and was like, why, you know?
So at 13 years old, as a fanboy at 13, as you say, what was it that made you decide that you wanted to learn to wrestle?
just liked it. That was the thing. It's like in that age, you see what they do and you try to copy and, you know, paste it. And you know, you have your friends and you start like wrestling around stuff like this. And then you try it out in the school and, you know, you get in trouble for that and blah, blah, blah. And then one of my best schoolmates, he got asked by two guys who've been a part of that wrestling club. Hey, we heard from the other guy that you're a wrestling fan. You wanna try it? You wanna train? And then, yeah, can I bring a friend? So yeah, cool, bring him. So he brought me. We both together first training, and we fell in love right away because it was fun though. And also, it was they taught us some basics like, you know, the bumps and everything and blah blah blah. But we kind of like been so much into it, like even like trying out in like at home on the couch or whatever, that you already had something down, you know. So, and it was nothing really big professional. It was just like some guys, they learned from some other guys from seminars, and they rented out a school. They opened up a club in Germany. And in Germany, when you register your club by the government, they help you out with the finances, so you don't have to pay a lot of money for renting the sport venue or something. So, and you go just to the place and just say, hey, we want to rent out this venue or like this hall of like from school for 2 hours on Saturdays, to say, yeah, cool, you're in club, blah, blah, blah. So the rent is out, it's not expensive. And on those jumping mats, on those, you know, when you do like all the athletic stuff, blah, 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 they kind of built like up a square. And then on there, you do like the wrestling stuff. So, but it was good to do the first steps into it. And then we did some shows in Dresden, like some guys from Berlin came down and, you know, like the little wrestling scene again, where everybody was kind of like looking like, you know, ECW, like, you know, with jeans and everything, and just had some shows and was some fun times, like to get into it, to see how like people do it and blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, picked it up with just getting some bookings out of my state, going up to Berlin somewhere there, doing this and doing that. And then I think around 2016, I decided to go to Berlin, where GWF is, and they offered like professional wrestling training by the two guys, Ahmed Cheng and Crazy Sexy Mike. They still run the school, and they kind of like brought me into professional wrestling. They brought me into the, okay, those are the bigger indie shows in Germany, and this is the main promotion in France, and this is how you kind of like, this is the business of professional wrestling, and you know, with the wages and how you kind of like behave and all that stuff. And it's funny though that sometimes some people need like a wrestling coach to tell you how to behave, because you know the household is probably not as good. But you know, stuff like this was kind of like very like shaping my life. Not that I didn't know how to behave. First of all, my parents raised me well. And also I had, before I went to GWF, I served 2 years in the German army. So I knew about doing this, you know. So it was a great experience. But like in those 6 years, kind of like to have the step one till like going more into the professional wrestling scene, which also like built it up in that time between 2000, 2006. You had like companies like growing like WXW, and you had like GSW, German Stampede Wrestling. They had also like big shows where they had like big names on it, like AJ Styles or some other like US fly-ins. And, you know, it got bigger. So 2005-ish, it got bigger from year after year after year after year. And then until WXW, for example, did last year 3 days of 16 karat with more shows around those 3 days. And every show had like over 1,000 people in the venue, you know.
It's just how it feels like. It grew very quickly once the ball got rolling. You mentioned it briefly there. I just want to quickly touch on it. What role did you have in the German army?
It was kind of like a scouter and safety soldier, if that's the right translation for it. It's like just easy translation, but it was like scout stuff, you know. But it was a little bit infantry, but it was not in the infantry. It was at the... Oh, God, I can tell you in German right away, but I have to, how I'm making it understand. So you have three groups, right? You have infantry, you have the airborne, and you have the on the sea.
The Navy? The Navy?
Navy. So, and on, like, in the airborne division, you have, it's not like the guys who just always fly. You also have, like, a mix of, like, infantry, airborne. They do more, like, office stuff and, you know, like, all the strategic stuff. And from that division, there was a group, which was a little bit more infantry-based, and I was a part of it. So we kind of, like, we did the shootings for all the soldiers. We did, like, all, like, this, you know, barbed wire stuff and whatever. So we've been kind of like the person for everything, but the major description was kind of like the scout. So we went out and just seen like, okay, this is the place where I can build the next place for a checkpoint or something. But it was like German army is not like the British army or like the US army, for example. German army could be like this and you have like different parts of it. But the majority of that, when you be a recruit and after that you spend their time, it can be totally like crazy that you are in a lot of like practice stuff and, you know, a lot of missions. And it can also be you get drunk every Thursday. So depends what you want. You know?
Is it something that potentially you would have made a career out of, or was it always just something you were going to do for a short while?
No, I was there for 2 years and I could have decided to go longer. Go like for 4 years and after that you probably go for 8 years and 12 years depends, but I decided to go for wrestling. That was my thing, stay longer in the army or just all in with professional wrestling, and luckily I choose right.
It took you, as you were saying, you saw German wrestling expand as you were there. You mentioned there AJ Styles. AJ Styles in one of your three matches, you mentioned AJ Daniels and Samoa Joe from Unbreakable 2005. With that match, with your second match, what is it about that match that really stands out? Is there a spot, a moment in that match that you still love to this day?
I remember they, and I haven't seen it before, they use kind of like the... I catch this one guy here, I catch this one guy there, and I go down and do two different moves at the same time. That was something where I said, wow, that's possible? And like everything on that match, like I haven't watched it in a while, but now probably will watch it back again. But I remember when I watched it the first time, and it was that time where kind of like internet got faster and you could like download stuff because otherwise you wouldn't know where to get like a DVD from something. So a friend of mine, he gave it to me. When I watched it, I was like, well, that match. And also like I loved in that time all three individual competitors. And I always loved like watching the matches from TNA, from our age. Like, and that was kind of like this new breed of wrestling where it felt like, wow, this is possible because I just watched WWE and, you know, there's a different kind of like style of wrestling in there, blah, blah, blah. But it was not like WWE, like it was more about the wrestling than the storytelling. And that was what got me into, because I see wrestling as a sport. Of course, it's entertainment. But for me, first, it's a sport because you have to be an athlete to do that. You have to be, you know, you have to be in a physical shape to compete. And the word is compete. So for me, it was always like matches like this. And even like with the experience of having matches like this after that amount of time, it's very like it brings you to a point where you really have to you know, to go hard or go home. So and seeing that was totally like for me mind blower because, again, you see like all like the great matches like in that time WWE had. And then you saw that and you think like, wow, how is that even possible? And also, how long are they wrestling? They're still going. So it was very inspiring and very like influential for me.
A lot of people draw comparisons in terms of that style and that energy from the X Division title with the WXW Shotgun title, a title which am I right in thinking you've held longer than anybody else? Is that still no, that's still your title? Is that still your? Are you still number one there, sir? Have you been clipped?
No,
now?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
I felt like you had it for a long, long time.
I had it for a long time, but I think that record got somebody else now. I'm not sure. I never lost the title. I vacated it.
Well, there you go. There's something. There's something in that. But then with that title, with your time in WXW, I know we're sort of rushing, we're breezing through your time in the German industry. But like, you were the unified champion, and you put it on the line against some of the best in Europe and beyond: Volta, Absolute Andy, Carsten Beck, Tommy End in there as well. Is there a match for you that stands out from your incredible run as part of WXW?
There's probably a lot of matches which I liked. I liked the matches me against Eddie Edwards. We had two matches. One was 2011, and it was the first time we were working, and we just beat the shit out of each other. But in a very cool way, because Eddie is a hard-hitting guy, such a great wrestler. And like, what I liked about him, he's like, he was always like, he didn't know me, but he kind of like trusted me in the way of like, okay, he gave me a lot of stuff. He gave me a lot of chance like to compete with him. And the other one was when I was champion and I had a match with him. And that was one of those matches I was really like exhausted afterwards, like maybe 20 minutes, 25 minutes. And same as the first one, just really destroyed. But I felt really exhausted after that. And that's something what I like, because, you know, it's like being proud of hard work. Otherwise, there was also a match against Davey Richards, which I had, which was also in that time on my bucket list, because he was also one of the guys I was really like watching into, or into it watching him. But I always like the matches against Walter, because they are real as it gets, and he's a real deal. But in general, like also with Tommy Ann, Alistair Black was always cool. Bad Bones, always had a good chemistry with him, and he's a great wrestler, of course. So many good matches.
We had Bad Bones on this show a short while ago, and it was not long. We spoke not long after the passing of Carsten Beck, Gurkha Akt, and he shared some memories that he had with Beck. I don't know whether you have any stories of Carsten Beck, because he's one of those guys that criminally outside of Europe should be more talked about, like a guy that had such charisma and such energy in the ring. And it's a shame that like more only people discover him after he's away.
Yeah,
you know,
I think in that time when he had like his peak, there wasn't a lot of like outside wrestling, because I remember when I left 2015, for us was just WXW and nothing else, because we had so much work. And I think when this big boom in Britain happened, when was that, 2016, I guess, when Progress went nuts and all the other promotions up there, just, you know, a lot of people came and they made all a good business. So I think it was a little bit then too late for him, because if I remember correctly, he was still wrestling there, and then he had the battle with cancer. But I remember Carsten also always as a funny guy, but not as a funny guy with, hey, I tell you a joke. But he was like this like sinister funny guy, because he was like very sarcastic, and he was very like, I don't know, he was the guy who would like make fun of you for tripping, you know, but like in a funny way, not really in a mean way. So, but for him, what I really like, the way he came up, you know, the way he started in the West Side Dojo, he started under a mask, Diego Latino, and then he involved himself in his character, in his own character, in his, like, this is me, this is Carsten Beck. He started probably as a baby face, didn't work. So then he became this asshole heel. And that was himself, like, he kind of, like, played himself in a lot of ways, just, you know, like a set turn up to 11. And a lot of people, they got so mad about him, and especially in those town shows when we, you know, like, we had those big shows in Oberhausen, and whatever, like those bigger towns. But when we went to the smaller town shows, to like the, you know, the village people living there, and they just, you know, think it's real. They get pissed off so quick, and not a lot of wrestling fans, like, you know, like scene fans in there. They know the chance, whatever, just really regular wrestling fans. And you always had them like this. And they've been so mad about him, and just made the babyface the work so easy. And also, he was very good in working with younger talents, you know, and just give them something where they look good and everything. So he was very smart in the way like he did his stuff and how he kind of like got up. And rightfully so, you know, we talk about him in a positive way.
Dub X Dub, still part of the WWE Network. It's been part of the circulation for the last couple of months now. It's great to see it back as part of the network. Is there anybody on that roster for WXW that we should be keeping an eye on, Axel? Because there's some big names. Like, I know that you obviously with Ring Camp, you have a wonderful association with Killer Kelly, who is a beast. And I think one of those is definitely going to be somebody to watch going forward. But I was curious if there was other people.
Shame on me. I'm not so much aware of the current roster. I just see it sometimes, but because I try to stay as much as possible away from social media, but because I'm not, and now I have to use it more. So I'm kind of like forced to be more on social media, but I hate social media.
Yeah.
So I wasn't that much aware. I saw they had some new faces and a lot of talented people, but if really like to say you should keep an eye on this guy, I really have to watch it. You know, I would like straight out of my head, I would say Mario Salani, because he's always a great performer. And he's a true athlete and really like a hard competitor. But otherwise, I have to see who's there and how like the stand is, because, you know, a lot of times you get lost in the shuffle and then you don't evolve and you don't progress. And you think because people give you props of, hey, that was a good match, you don't have to work hard on your, you know, so, and it becomes and that's the curse of wrestling in general, that people who think they made it, they kind of like loosen up, and you know, it happens to everybody, I guess. Happens to everyone in the wrestling scene, happened to me as well. So, you know, just see what's up there.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're part of WWE, there's two factions that people talk about. We're going to touch on those. They're going to touch on Sanity and Imperium. With Sanity, how involved were you in the creation of that and the early conversations that formed that group?
I wasn't involved at all. It was back in the day with Sawyer Fulton. They put us together as a tag team and they told us, hey, there's something in plan. We cannot tell you what and you know, what we do, but just, you know, be ready and you guys will be a part of that. That was the mention to us from creative to talent. Then EY showed up and then they put us together. They kind of like, hey, guys, this is Eric. Eric, this is excellent. Jake. So you guys are now together. So you guys doing this group thing, blah, blah, blah. And they told us like, hey, Hunter wants to have like the Smoking Aces 3 punk Nazi guys, you know, they go in with guns blazing and, you know, stuff like this. So he apparently he liked the movie and he liked those guys, so he wanted to have a group like those maniacs. And then we tried to create it, blah blah blah, and it was kind of like the thing like Smoking Aces, and we tried to create like a little bit kind of like a knockoff outfits, but then it turned out a little bit more like the Wasteland Mad Max stuff. They're still always shown this one old picture from a European tour where I have this gray jacket with like the stuff on, which is super old, but they still use it. So that was kind of the experience. But then when they debut us, they told us like, hey, you got a fourth member. No, actually, Nikki Cross came up top and Nikki Cross came up to us and it kind of like, you know, stand in front of us and say, yeah, I'm now part of the group. And we go, yeah, let's go, Nikki, come in. We saw you joking. So no, seriously, I'm part of the group now. He's like, really? Cool. Because we just toured. I toured with her anyway, and she's been big, we've just been good friends and still like very good friends to this day. So I was very happy with that decision. And that was the sugarcoating for the whole group, because that was something new, right? So and then we figured out, okay, this is the outfit, blah, 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 blah. And we got like the thumbs up by Hunter. And we did the debut, yeah. But afterwards was a little bit weird because as it is, they kind of like make you a mistake and then, you know, polish the diamond a little bit more. So they kind of, I got the instruction, yeah, don't be too much resting. Just be more like, you know, psychopath, like blah, blah, blah. But it's hard to do this in a PG product. You cannot go full psychopath, full anarchy, full. We had a lot of great ideas, like with like, you know, especially when you see riots and everything. And that's basically also for some of the group, like part of their history, like here today, you know, with like all the Irish stuff. And I've just been through some times where I had like some demonstration riots as well. So just, you know, I know how that feels. And like I, when you watch videos, so we pitched a lot of that, but unfortunately didn't came through or just wasn't having it. So yeah. But in the end was kind of like they gave us a canvas with like an outlining and we just, you know, painted ourselves, and then they liked it. Or if they didn't like it, they gave us a new one and just, you know, corrected it.
So you got, but when the call up happened, it seems like a weird question to ask, but how surprised were you when they kind of went, well, that's it now. That's all. Felt like you'd barely sort of... You'd barely painted on the canvas at this point, Axel. Like you'd got some amazing outlines in, and you'd started colouring, but it felt like there was more to come. And so, did that disbanding come as a surprise?
Not really, because we recognized that kind of like creative is not doing anything with us. But it didn't make sense at that time because we've been one of the hottest acts on NXT in that time. Especially after the War Games match. And after the War Games match, it was kind of like, you know, they dropped the ball with it. But it wasn't because we did something wrong. It was because they planned to move us up. And as we got told, like, Vince McMahon got the list of names. And he said, this. And then he decided kind of like, it's just us three and without Nikki. But also because Nikki was staying in NXT to kind of like keep the women's division strong. So that was like such a weird part, and that also took like the joy away from getting called up, because it was very weird. It was kind of like, hey guys, you get a call to SmackDown, and it was kind of, yes, finally, because, you know, you start in NXT and they always tell you, hey, this is the main goal. You want to go up there. You want to go on the road. You want to, you know, make the money up there. So it's kind of like, yes, main roster, awesome. SmackDown, cool. Let's go. Oh, without Nikki? Fuck that. So it was pretty, God damn it.
Like you say, she was the sugar coating, and they're taking the coating off, just as that. There's a lot of people that have come through that almost say that the call up process is kind of cursed at this point. Do you feel like that's the case, or do you feel like it's just a case of right, you've got to be right place, right time?
Yeah, I mean, you have to figure it out. That's the thing. Like John Cena said once, and this is also a thing what stuck in my head. You cannot moan and cry. So I want to be champion. This, because it's not in your hand. You only can control the controllable, and you only should try to control the controllable. I see it from a lot of like talent perspectives that they probably get called up and get dropped like a hot potato, speaking from experience. But there's so much negativity about, I get it. I totally get it. I get that fans are pissed off about that because their favorite star from NXT had the chance to go up on national television to Raw or SmackDown and then is not getting used like it used. They get used on NXT. But I see it like this. NXT is a total different brand than Raw and SmackDown. NXT is more about wrestling stills, entertainment stills on WWE Compella, but two different pair of shoes. And speaking from experience, like it's in NXT, you have maybe you have one head writer, you have Hunter, you have HBK, then you have some other creative guy, but you have maybe two handful of people who take care of the business. In the main roster, you have this times five or times three. I don't know how many people work there, but you see so many new writers, you see so many new people, and you have so many different agents and blah, 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 blah. In the end, it's like, try to do that what kind of like makes Vince McMahon happy because this is his company. Sometimes people have the power to change the product, as we can see. And I know they are very high on social media, so they see, okay, what is hot right now? Whatever, I don't know, hashtag give blah, blah, blah a chance or whatever, like stuff like this. So they react to that when enough numbers are behind them. So, and you don't know really what happens if you're not inside and if you're not really one of the decision makers. So it's easy to say, yeah, they all like, you know, it's a curse to get called up. But let's use, for example, Finn Balor. Like, he had a great career. In the main roster, even like, you know, he was unlucky with the shoulder, then came back. He always was used. He was used on every show. Like the only thing what you see is television, but you know, all like the house shows around when they tour around the world, used on every event, making a lot of good money because, you know, of merchandise and appearances, yada, yada, yada. So that's success. This is success. And a lot of people don't see that because they don't go to every house show. They cannot see what's going on behind the curtain. You just see what you see on the telly. So, and then it's also, you don't have a lot of time. So you have like the 3 hours, but you have commercials. And sometimes it's so stacked and you want to give their time and this time, blah, blah, blah. And they rewrite the show, blah, blah, blah. So it's a lot of stuff, but you have to figure out how much time you use for this part. Can you save that for the next week? Or can you, you know, there's a story coming, but we cannot do it now because right now the focus is on that story. So we cannot use this two talents to go into a story because it would not benefit their work because everybody is now looking on that story. So it's a lot of like puzzle pieces and it's like a Rubik's cube and it's very hard and a lot of people don't know that. So it's easy to say, oh, it's a curse when you get called up. And also you need to get in touch or you need to kind of like build up a relationship with Vince McMahon. That's one of the things I failed with or we failed with because he wasn't that much around. And then when he was around, it was kind of like, it was quite hard to talk to him because he was always super busy. He always takes his time to speak to his talent, and I had the chance to speak with him twice. But it was in a weird time where it was kind of like, you know, they always dropped the ball with us. That's what I felt, you know. So we started and they told us, okay, they have a lot of plans for you, and it took too much time. And then 2 or 3 months later, you know, they dropped the ball because, you know, it wasn't the right time for that. And that's always a big part of wrestling, the right time, the right moment. It has to fit. It has to, you know, fit in. And yeah, so with a lot of NXT guys, they come up there, they have their name because they've been successful in NXT. That's why they got called up. And then sometimes it does not work out. In our case, Sanity wasn't a good fit for the main roster. Look at the stuff with what they do with Retribution. You had so much potential in that stuff, and then they totally screwed it up because they needed to reinvent it and everything, you know? So,
do you feel like that Retribution angle would have fitted so beautifully with what you were doing with Sanity? And
yeah, that's why I mentioned this. That's why I mentioned it, because I was thinking about my time in SmackDown when Retribution came and said, oh, that's a lot of stuff what we wanted to do. But it wasn't possible in that time, or maybe it was too much money to whatever, crash a window or whatever. And then I saw, oh, so you can do it up there. But then I saw kind of like they started good with it. And then I kind of like, you know, lose details on it. And you see all this like different guys and different, you know, I don't know, different shapes of people. So you could see it's not the same. It's like people are looking on that. People are really like into details. So it's weird. It's weird. But again, you cannot control that. That's up to the guys who will make the decisions. And if NXT talents come up to the main roster, they have to give their best. And I'm sure everybody gave their best to kind of like get into that rhythm and get into that system.
Yeah. Did you air some of those concerns with Vince in the two conversations that you had, or were they sort of just sort of lighthearted sort of catch up? Hey, how are you, pal? Type conversations.
It's kind of like, hey, how are you? Blah, blah, blah. And I, at the first meeting, I think it was the second meeting. I don't remember, but like the meeting I remember was probably just 6 months in already. Just went to him and said, hey, I feel I never had the chance to introduce myself, so I want to introduce myself. So I introduced myself, blah, blah, blah. And I asked him for, like, in that time, there was, I think, a little issue with, like, passing on the creative ideas from talents to writers, and they pass it on into the meetings, to the head writers, to, you know, the decision makers. So, and I asked him for, like, hey, can you hear me out for, like, there's an idea we have. For like using social media, because we understand that 2 hours of SmackDown, you know, minus commercial, not enough to get there. But we have social media, like WWE have channels, and we know stuff because, you know, it's the modern day of big tech and everything. So we kind of pitch an idea that we kind of like do more on social media with a little snippets. And when they are like good, that they put them on television, because that character of or the characters of Sanity do not have to go into a wrestling match and just, you know, lock up and try fancy chain wrestling. For us, it was important to get at least a little bit airtime to establish the character. So, for example, let me dance around a burning trash can or something and just laugh crazy and just do my mosh pit stuff, you know. So that's everything what you have to see, like crazy guy at the burning trash can. What the hell? Just stuff like this. Or let us start a riot. Let us be like fire starters in like a skip where like some people like starting to fight each other and we cause the chaos for that. Stuff like this, you know. And then EY had a great idea about like doing something with social media that the fans can decide who we fight next. So in the way of like, hey, you have your three choices. You know, and the choice is up to you who we will purge, for example. Or there's this thing like what you want to do that Sanity does next, and then three options. I don't know, lit a car on fire, whatever, like destroy Vince's office or something like this, where we kind of like get this little airtime, but also get the fans involved on social media. So, and he listened to me and blah, 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 but probably for me, it's like, my English is okay, but it wasn't like that much. And also you may be a little bit nervous, you know what I mean? Because you stand in front of the boss. So, right? And then you probably, okay, awesome. So you have the contact of your writer, right? So pitches to him and make sure he brings it up to me again, because it's the thing, you have to be prepared when you go in his office. And if you talk with him about the topic, he maybe lose after 5 minutes. Like, you know, he's not listening anymore probably, because when it takes too long. So you have to maybe go in and just, and that's something what I got as an advice afterwards. Just have a concept. Just go in, hey, look at this picture or see this video, or I filmed something. So how do you like this? So you can... it's not a good way to have a too long conversation with somebody, because after a while you're just fried. Yeah.
It's a case of just kind of getting in there with the pitch very quickly. This is what I want. Here's a picture of how it'll look, any questions as quick and succinct as possible.
And that's the experience you have to make. So you cannot blame Vince McMahon. You cannot blame the company. You always have to blame you first, right? And how do we learn? Through mistakes. And you have to do mistakes to get better. And you have to do mistakes to, just grow in that part of your job.
Mm. Despite sanity coming to an end, it must have been nice to reunite with Big Daddy Walter. And you guys hang out again.
That's an old name, Big Daddy Walter.
Big Daddy Walter.
It was cool. I remember they had the draft coming up, and I got appearances for NXT UK, and I was asking Triple H about it, and just, what's that all about? He said, don't like that you guys sitting around here doing nothing. I want to use it for NXT. So Big Demo came today, and he went back to NXT US, and they brought me together with my old friends from WXW, which was sweet as sugar.
Amazing. We saw, just as you were kind of getting into it, the pandemic hit. We were seeing Undisputed Era and Imperium in this Worlds Collide war. I don't know how much you can tell me. I don't know how much was mapped out. But had the world not caught fire, Axel, what would we have seen from Imperium over like the last 12 months? Do you know?
I know quite the plans they were. They had plans, and it was probably something cool. So, yeah, but not happen. I don't know if I can tell the plans. If I should, if I not, maybe another time. But that was fine. Something planned. But I'm like I believe when I tell this what was planned, I kind of like will make people sad, or I don't know, like, so that would be great, blah blah blah. But like, you know. When the pandemic hits, nobody knew what is coming. So we all had to get, you know, adjusted to the situation. Even right now, a lot of things happen, which are crazy. And they made the best out of it. Everybody made the best out of it. Everybody, you know, just went through this it was quite an interesting time because we had to figure out what is next. So I was sitting at home for 6 weeks. No, yes, for 6 months, and still got paid 4 months. So, you know, I'm very grateful for that. And then they decided, like, okay. So we did like virtual Zoom meetings where we got an email before with some matches, and it was like the UK guys. So all like NXT UK had to watch some old school British round matches and stuff like this too. Be familiar with round systems and be familiar with like the art of the professional wrestling in Britain at that time in the 80s and 70s and 90s. And then we kind of like met at Zoom, and it was cool like to, you know, chat around, just, you know, talk about a little bit wrestling. And for some people, they've been isolated so long, and I was lucky enough in Germany, it was fine. You know, they just told us, hey, be smart, quarantine yourself if you want, keep a distance, whatever. And just, you know, wear a mask in the supermarket, nothing else. But like with the guys in Britain, they just had to, there was a lockdown, right?
Yeah, we had a full lockdown. Then we started coming out of it. Our prime minister said, here's some vouchers to go to restaurants. And then we all went to restaurants. And he said, why did you go to restaurants? The virus has spread. We're shutting down again. So that's kind of what we went through.
Okay, cool.
We had a brief return. We're kind of coming back now, all being well. But
okay, good.
It was at the end of that sort of third lockdown that we started seeing NXT UK coming back. And we saw yourself, as you said, part of the Heritage Cup. What was the energy and the atmosphere like being in the BT Sports studio then, now that wrestling's coming back?
That's a great studio, and I hope they can keep that, because that is such a great atmosphere in there. It's very, everything is clean, everything is nice. You have your own dressing rooms with a telly inside where you can watch the product when you lace your boots, stuff like this. So it's very, very, very cool sports studio. And also, everybody was hyped. Everybody was really like ready to go. Everybody was kind of like, finally, we're getting out of the house and we go back to work. And especially with the Heritage Cup, that was something new, and like especially the week before, We had a lot of like training stuff where we kind of like trained the rounds and just, you know, get into the material of what are the rules and blah, blah, blah. And especially for WWE was something new because they didn't understand the rules. It's just been like, okay, it's like rounds. Okay, let's do rounds. But there's more to it. Like you need to have a clock, and then after before they WWE want to have like this, like in UFC, like 10 seconds, you know. So, but usually it's like it's not like this. Rounds end, and when the pinfall is gone or somebody like tapped, then the round is over. But they continue the round sometimes. So, and Noam and I, we had the first round system match. So from the production standpoint, was kind of like the first try of it, and it was fine in the end, and it was fun to do, and it was my first round match as well. It was like a good experience, especially with a guy like Noam Dar, who's really a great competitor, really cool guy, you know, and very talented wrestler as well. So it was a good experience. So yeah.
Now, as terms of where things sit with you, as you've said already, you've not been released, but you're just not being renewed is the actual terms. When you worked the angle the other week, getting beaten up by Imperium, did you know this was coming?
No, I didn't know. I thought the story will continue. That I thought like, okay, there's like, we talked about it. Like we've just been very excited about, because we could work again against each other in the ring, so we could like, you know, tear the house down with just beating us up, you know. But in the end it was kind of like, okay, so now I'm out of Imperium, so probably they want to have Sanity 2.0 but without EY. Okay, let's see how that works out. And so almost like just being ready just to, you know, alternate my Sanity gear and just get some new stuff done and blah, 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 which luckily I didn't. And then that happens. And I thought like, yeah, why not? And also another situation was like, when we talked to maybe, you know, that was something like we had like some little stuff in there all the weeks that I always step in front because I believe I'm now the leader. And now just, you know, it's kind of like when Walter is not there, so now like we three kind of like not working as together as the four guy or four person unit. So, you know, so some little details in there, and in the end was kind of like, okay, so now I'm kicked out. So basically going together with Killian again, or staying in Imperium and then have this little fight between us. And then Walter comes and just, you know, clears our heads with just don't stay together. It's wrong, whatever. But in the end, it's just, you know, I'm happy how they did it, because it wasn't something like, hey, he's gone, that's it, no explanation. And I'm also happy that also I had my last match NXT against Kieran Dane, and that my two friends of Imperium could give me the farewell.
So it was unexpected, it was fitting. You've mentioned about Sanity there and about the Sanity gear. I can't help but notice, Axel, that over in Impact Wrestling, EY is doing something that looks a bit like Smoking Aces. I don't know whether you've picked up the phone and had a chat with Eric at this point. Is there anything there, maybe?
He reached out to me. He said, hey, sorry to hear, blah, 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 because, you know, I did it when he got released, so, and we're still in contact, we're still good friends. No, we just had a small chat, but nothing about, hey, come over to Impact and whatever. And yeah, so basically what you see, Violent by Design, is basically EY's vision, what he had with Sanity as well. So a lot of things in there is basically all the material we couldn't use on NXT or main roster.
Even though you're not part of it, it must be exciting to see it coming to life in some capacity.
I'm happy for EY. I'm super happy for him, because I could see his passion for wrestling back.
You've we're nearly come to the end of our time together, but you have alluded to a plan B in interviews. Yeah. Are you in any position to shed any light on what the plan B might be?
No, the plan B has nothing to do with a different promotion or anything. The plan B was for me that I was luckily realistic enough to see like, okay, it could happen. Not that I was, you know, aware of like, okay, it will happen. This is this. It's like, it's always like, it could be, you know, it could be over like this. especially when the pandemic hit, and then they had this first mass release of like people, and I was very I felt very safe in a way. No, I will not get released because I'm right now in one of the greatest stables, like in WWE and like Imperium, and they want to split us up now. They probably had some plans in the future, but whatever, how and whatever, when and blah, blah, blah. But for me, it was always, okay, what if? And when it would happen, I need to be prepared. Because it cannot happen, and you kind of like standing there, you know, your pants are down, and you kind of like, oh, what now, you know? So, and also I have the luxury of know kind of like what to do in the ring. So I wrestled before. I wrestled in WWE. I got better as a performer, so all like the knowledge I collected in those 6 years are gold. And I will use in the future for sure. But for me, it was kind of like having something ready. And that was for me just building up a lot of like connections. So how can I say it in the best way? I just met a lot of interesting people. I just be friends with a lot of interesting people. I know a lot of guys who knows a lot of guys. And this is how it works. You need vitamin C for connection and resting. And I reached out to a couple of friends and then also like a couple of friends reached out to me and just asked, can I help you with something, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll see what comes up. We'll see what comes on the table, if anything comes on the table. But for me right now, like my plan B is just to go home and just go back into the German wrestling scene and just, you know, get that hyped up again. Because I feel like in the last years, when the majority of the bigger talent like Walter, et cetera, just left, the quality of it just, you know, decreased as well.
But that must be a wonderful... I mean, it's as sad as it is to see guys like Walter leaving that scene, it's got to be exciting for you.
Yeah.
Like an appetite whetter to go, I want to get back in there and I want to...
It's super exciting because, again, I lost... I left Germany in 2015. And then 2016, this independent wrestling boom came. So I never had the experience of, for example, working Progress. I never had the experience to working like one of the other shows or ICW, all like the bigger shows, like they draw all like the people in, stuff like this. So, and I want to be a part of that as well. I want to make my name now... known on the independent circuit. You know, I have built up a brand 6 years in WWE, but that's good. But I want to build up myself like a brand on like the indie circuit as well. Just, you know, you have so many great talents still out there that are not signed under a contract, and just work with them and just perform like in front of like all the people who, you know, want to come there and just, you know, you can connect with them again, like even through the merch table, maybe through the shows, whatever. And that's that experience. I want to have this back. I want to have this back in the way of like, I'm free to work whatever I want, whoever I want. I want to make my own schedule. You know, I'm free as a bird. So let's see what you can do with that.
To the German wrestling world, the Axeman cometh. Where can people go to keep up to date with everything that you are doing, Axel?
Yeah. And again, it could happen anything from now on or from the day after I got released, because I just after I got the message they will not renew my contract, that I was immediately on the phone and just, you know, reaching out and just being very active. No time to cry, you know. So
absolutely. Where can people go if they want to keep up with everything that you're doing, Axel?
Again, please.
Sorry, where can people find you online if they want to see what you're up to, see what your next steps are? I know you don't like social media and stuff, but is that the best way people can keep up with you, see what you're doing?
Yeah, that's social media is a necessary tool, so all good. Twitter will be Xman3016. You can guess why 3016. And I try to change my Instagram handle. It's still the WWE Wolf, but when you type in Axel Xman, you should find me. I still have the blue check mark, so, you know, there's only one.
Exactly.
No, but Twitter and Instagram are the two social media channels I use. And, you know,
Well, I speak on behalf of everybody to say that we are incredibly excited to see what the Axeman does next. It's been a genuine pleasure to catch up with you. Maybe we'll meet each other in a mosh pit in 2022. Who knows,
oh,
Axel?
Who knows?
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.